A logo appears. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Home Entertainment. Another logo in bold slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, a pinpoint expands to a circle, like the pupil of an eye, to show scenes from a black and white film. Words appear. If you are looking for adventure, you will find it.
Casablanca, city of hope and despair, located in French Morocco in North Africa. The meeting place of adventurers, fugitives, criminals, refugees, lured into this danger-swept oasis by the hope of escape to the Americas. But they're all trapped, for there is no escape. Against this fascinating background is woven the story of an imperishable love and the enthralling saga of six desperate people, each in Casablanca to keep an appointment with destiny.
I was willing to shoot Captain Reno, and I'm willing to shoot you.
All right, Major, you asked for it.
Titles appear over scenes from the film. Humphrey Bogart, the most dangerous man in the world's most dangerous city. Ingrid Bergman, fighting the strange fascination that draws her closer and closer to him.
You knew how much I loved you. How much I still love you.
They kiss. Now, a man with a scar above his right eyebrow leans against the bar with Bogart. A title, Paul Henreid.
I know a good deal more about you than you suspect. I know, for instance, that you're in love with a woman. It's perhaps a strange circumstance that we both should love the same woman.
Now, a stout man, Sidney Greenstreet.
What do you want for Sam?
I don't buy and sell human beings.
That's too bad. That's Casablanca's leading commodity.
You can ask any price you want, but you must give me those letters.
That's no deal.
All right. I tried to reason with you. I tried everything. Now I want those letters.
Bergman holds a gun. Her hand shakes. Bogart walks toward her. The trailer continues with scenes and text. Casablanca, where every burning moment brings a new danger. Where every kiss may be the last. Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, Paul Henreid. Claude Rains, Conrad Veidt, Sidney Greenstreet, and Peter Lorre. Casablanca. The original Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer logo. Now a small black and white TV screen.
You may have seen it like this, but it's been 50 years since you could experience it like this.
The small TV screen expands to fill our view. Paul Henreid leads the singing in the cafe.
Set in French Morocco at the beginning of the Second World War, Casablanca is the story of those desperate to escape the Nazi regime.
Peter Lorre runs to Bogart.
Rick, help me.
Gendarmes hustle him away.
Do something. You must help me, Rick.
I stick my neck out for nobody.
Humphrey Bogart is Rick, cynical expatriate.
What is your nationality?
I'm a drunkard.
That makes Rick a citizen of the world.
I reserve the table. Victor Laszlo.
There is a man arrived in Casablanca on his way to America. He will offer a fortune to anyone who will furnish him with an exit visa.
Oh, I should say two.
Why two?
He is traveling with a lady.
We'll take one.
I think not. I've seen the lady.
Ingrid Bergman is Ilsa, the last woman he ever expected to see, the only woman he ever loved.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.
I thought I would never see you again, that you are out of my life.
I know a good deal more about you than you suspect. I know that you're in love with a woman. It's perhaps a strange circumstance that we both should be in love with the same woman.
You knew how much I loved you. How much I still love you.
The Academy Award-winning masterpiece of its time.
I suspect that under that cynical shell, you're at heart a sentimentalist.
Is still one of the greatest motion pictures of all time.
Are you ready, Ilsa?
I don't know what's right any longer. You have to think for both of us. For all of us.
She leans her head on his shoulder.
Dooley Wilson.
You must remember this.
Sidney Greenstreet. Peter Lorre. Claude Rains.
This gun is pointed right at your heart.
That is my least vulnerable spot.
Paul Henreid.
I love you very much, my dear.
Ingrid Bergman. and Humphrey Bogart. Isn't it about time we play it again?
A close-up on Bogart and Bergman.
He's looking at you, kid.
A title, Casablanca, and a studio credit slate. Now, words appear over film footage. If you are looking for adventure, you will find it. A man in a white suit runs by two policemen. Now, we look through the ornate grillwork of a window onto the marketplace. A title, original theatrical trailer.
Casablanca. There is no escape. Against this fascinating background is woven the story of an imperishable love and the enthralling saga of six desperate people, each in Casablanca to keep an appointment with destiny.
I was willing to shoot Captain Rhino, and I'm willing to shoot you.
All right, Major, you asked for it.
At the time of its release, Casablanca won Oscars for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay. Just desserts for a classic film that continues to enthrall audiences and win awards to this day.
You knew how much I loved you.
Recently, the American Film Institute named Casablanca number two of the top 100 American films. An enduring classic, but who knew? At the time of its release, it was just another movie from a Hollywood dream factory. By now, we've all heard of Rick's Cafe. But just what is the allure that has kept us coming back time and time again? Is it the spirit of wartime patriotism? The intrigue and danger of the mysterious desert locale? Or is it the desperation of star-crossed lovers trapped in Casablanca?
A title, You Must Remember This, a tribute to Casablanca, narrated by Lauren Bacall.
Who are you really, and what were you before? What did you do, and what did you think, huh?
We said no questions.
Bogart, as Rick, pours champagne for Ilsa, played by Bergman.
Here's looking at you, kid.
Critic Pia Lindstrom.
Perhaps it's just the themes of lost love and redemption that people respond to. It's a strange mix within that movie of personalities and story and music that seem to come together unexpectedly.
Rudy Belmer.
Great story, marvelous characters, interesting melodrama. The thing moves like gangbusters. The backdrop still works, even though it's dated. But it goes beyond that. It transcends the period.
It seems incredible now.
Screenwriter Julius Epstein.
But every major studio made a picture a week, 50 pictures a year. When we were shooting Casablanca, it was just one of the 50.
Hollywood, 1942. The studio system was at its peak. Samuel Goldwyn, David O. Selznick, Louis B. Mayer. These were the titans behind Hollywood's golden era and the greatest movies ever made. Over at Warner Brothers, studio chief Jack Warner certainly earned his place among these legendary movie moguls. And as his right-hand man, executive in charge of production, Hal B. Wallace.
Jack Warner made a lot of the financial decisions, of course, but Hal Wallace was the one that was running the studio. Wallace okayed every script.
Story editor Irene Lee Diamond.
Makeup, every dress, every suit. In those days, the major studios were run like that.
It was basically Hal Wallace's determination and his instinct for this thing that really made Casablanca the classic that it is.
Casablanca was just another place on the map until Wallace got his hands on a play entitled Everybody Comes to Rick's.
I used to be sent to New York once a year to look at new plays and try to find new material. And I saw this Everybody Comes to Rick's play, unproduced play. It had been written by Murray Burnett and Joan Allison, but it never got produced.
Based upon the travels of playwright Murray Burnett, Everybody Comes to Rick's was a story born directly out of the fear and chaos of a people without hope.
Well, originally, he and his wife had gone over to Europe, and this was in the late 30s.
Film historian Rudy Belmer.
His wife had relatives there, and he was able to see firsthand in Vienna and elsewhere what was happening with the refugee movement.
I was upset. I had no idea I was going to write a play.
Murray Burnett.
An anti-Nazi play or a political play. I was ill. I literally got ill. On that same European trip, when I was in the south of France, my friends from Antwerp, from Belgium, said, hey, let's go out tonight to a nightclub to Cap Ferrat. And we went to Cap Ferrat to a nightclub. There was a black man at the piano. And I said to my first wife, gee, what a setting for a play.
I took it back to the coast with me, and I gave it to my boss, who was Hal Wallace, and we decided to make it.
Jack Warner paid more for Everybody Comes to Rick's than had ever been paid for an unproduced play. And true to Hollywood form, a name change was imminent.
There had been a very successful picture just a few years before this called Algiers, with Hedy Lamarr, Charles Boyer, the Casbah. And it conjures up all kinds of romantic, exotic locales, you know. So it occurred to Hal Wallace and others that perhaps the title would be much more potent if they called it Casablanca.
Casablanca was invaded at the time the picture came out.
And Murray so Burnett.
A great title, Casablanca. People knew about Casablanca.
You see, they had two things to cover.
Actor Dan Seymour.
In addition to the world and regarding the war and also what was happening. And so they didn't know, they had to watch it day by day.
I think that it was very timely.
Irene Lee Diamond.
It was in some ways almost a little ahead of its time, because most people in America didn't think of all the people that were stranded in various parts of the world trying to get out.
A plane flies over Rick's Cafe.
That gave the picture a real feeling of tension, and this, suddenly people realized what we were in the middle of. At the same time, there was a great deal of humor in it, which the Epsteins were totally responsible for.
Philip and Julius Epstein were Hal Wallace's first choice for the difficult task of adapting Casablanca for the screen. Known for their ironic wit, the Epstein brothers turned Casablanca into a desert oasis, full of colorful characters.
I have to warn you, sir. I beseech you. This is a dangerous place full of vultures.
The man smiles as he steals another man's wallet.
Sir, it has been a pleasure to meet you. I'm sorry.
And clever conversation.
What in heaven's name brought you to Casablanca?
My health. I came to Casablanca for the waters.
The waters? What waters? We're in the desert.
I was misinformed.
That was my favorite line, because I think it summed up
Julius Epstein,
Bogart's character. The cynic, and is a real piece of chutzpah, that line.
And the picture crackles with the Epstein style.
What is your nationality?
I'm a drunkard. You call the airport and let me hear you tell them. And remember, this gun is pointed right at your heart.
That is my least vulnerable spot.
How can you close me up? On what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
The Epsteins' impact was mighty, but their stay was short, for they were called to Washington to work on Frank Capra's patriotic documentary series, Why We Fight.
The Epsteins had written the bulk of the film up to the beginning of the flashback.
Film historian Ronald Haver.
They were in production, and consequently there wasn't enough material coming out. They still had to work on the second half.
To tackle that second half, Hal Wallace brought in screenwriter Howard Koch, who had just finished The Letter with Betty Davis at Warner Brothers. Koch added a new and very necessary dimension to the film.
I always looked upon Casablanca a little mystically, that it had its own reason for being. It was a picture the audiences needed, the American, well, the world audiences, actually. What it said was that there were values that were worth making sacrifices for. And it said it in a very entertaining way. But that was basically what it said. If Casablanca had ended, in my opinion, with Bogart going off with Bergman, the romantic ending, this wouldn't have happened. There wouldn't be any legend today.
It's Koch's contribution that makes Rick the sort of very mysterious, liberal sort of man that he is, a bitter man, but always on the side of the right side.
Lee, whatever gave you the impression that I might be interested in helping Laszlo escape?
Because, my dear Ricky, I suspect that under that cynical shell, you're at heart a sentimentalist. In 1935, you ran guns to Ethiopia. In 1936, you fought in Spain on the loyalist side.
And got well paid for it on both occasions.
The winning side would have paid you much better.
There was a gentleman on the lot by the name of Casey Robinson, also under contract to Warner Brothers, who had done some of the big Betty Davis pictures, among many other things.
Rudy Belmer.
He was given the material to read, a kind of a synthesis of what the Epsteins were doing and what Howard Koch was doing. And he thought the comedy was great, he thought the melodrama was terrific, but he said, indeed, the romantic aspect, the love story, is weak. So they put him on the picture, and he gave his attention to the romantic scenes, to the flashback, adding more scenes with Rick and Ilsa.
The flashback sequence in Casablanca, when they go to Paris, the entire thing is done almost entirely with music. And it's Steiner, of course, that wrote the music. He knew how to. He was a master at orchestration. He was a master at taking popular songs of the time and making them sound like they were written specifically for what he was doing.
Max Steiner was Hal Wallace's favorite composer. Indeed, he was everybody's favorite composer at Warner Brothers. His stunning score dominates the Paris flashback and sets the mood for one of the screen's greatest romances.
He was always on the cutting edge with all of his scores. And he had a great facility for working a tune into a picture.
Composer Henry Mancini.
The way he worked in the As Time Goes By, you hear fragments of it here and there, and it's really masterful.
A clip of Rick alone in the cafe after Ilsa leaves. Scene.
I don't know what's right any longer. You have to think for both of us. For all of us.
All right. I will. Who's looking at you, kid?
I wish I didn't love you so much.
As Time Goes By, it was never. When it first came out in 1931, it was never a big hit. It did all right, but it wasn't a big hit. Of course, Casablanca gave it a renewed interest, and people, you know, were suddenly aware of As Time Goes By. It still had a nostalgic quality about it, however, which was essential.
The picture was over, and they were saying that maybe Max would replace that song, you know, As Time Goes By, with his own.
Henry Mancini.
As it turned out, it was tied into the film so tightly that they would have had to have got Ingrid Bergman back. In the meantime, she had cut her hair, and so it just didn't work. And so finally it ended up with the As Time Goes By as the song.
Play it, Sam. Play As Time Goes By.
Played it for her, he played it for me.
Well, I don't think I can remember.
If she can stand it, I can. Play it.
You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
You can't hear this song as time goes by without having some kind of an instant recall. And I think that's what to get all the elements together to create that powerful image. That's what a song takes, needs to become a standard.
As time goes by.
Paris, a place for living and loving. Suddenly, lives shattered and lovers torn apart. Everyone can identify with Rick and Ilse's ill-fated love affair. And it's hard to think of Casablanca without the unforgettable performances of Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, and Paul Henreid. But as the screenplay was being adapted, Warner Brothers announced the stars of the picture: Dennis Morgan, Ann Sheridan, and Ronald Reagan.
I've read stories and I've heard talk that
Julius Epstein.
Ronald Reagan was considered for lead, that George Raft turned her down. We didn't know any of that while we were working on it. And all I can say is we were very, very lucky not to get Reagan, that Raft turned her down.
And Bogie set the standard for the sensitive yet hard-nosed hero.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
Now, a photo of a smiling Ingrid Bergman wearing a print dress with a lace collar.
Wallace decided that Ingrid Bergman would be perfect for the role of Ilsa. There was only one catch.
Ingrid Bergman seemed to be the ideal choice, but David O. Selznick had Ingrid Bergman under contract. So the deal was, between Selznick and Hal Wallace, Selznick would loan Ingrid Bergman for Casablanca, and Warners would loan Olivia de Havilland to David O. Selznick.
Well, my brother and I were called into Hal Wallace's office. And
Epstein sits in a director's chair.
Selznick wants to hear the story before he'll give us Bergman. And we said, what story? We haven't worked it out yet. And he says, wing it. So we went to Selznick's office, and he was having lunch at his desk, and he was eating soup, and he never looked up at us. He said, go ahead. And we said, you know, it's Casablanca, and the refugees are coming in, and they're in trouble, and they have to get out, and they have letters of transit, and some couriers have been murdered, and there's a man who sells the letters of transit, and there's a Bulgarian couple comes. I keep on talking, and I suddenly realize that I've talked about a half hour or 45 minutes of the story, and Bergman's character hasn't appeared yet. And he hasn't looked up at us yet. So I said, oh, here comes the key word. I said, oh, mad. It's going to be a lot of mad like Algiers. A lot of cigarette smoking, guitar. And he looked up and he nodded, and we knew we had Bergman.
Said Hal Wallace, she's the only actress with the luminous quality, the warmth and tenderness for the role.
I tried to stay away. I thought I would never see you again. That you are out of my life.
A tear rolls slowly down her cheek. Film critic Pia Lindstrom.
I can't possibly give you an objective opinion because it's impossible to see a movie with your mother in it and be objective. I have to be subject. And of course, I think she looks ravishing in every scene.
There were a tremendous number of Bergman fans and Bogart fans.
Irene Lee Diamond.
You know, people used to go to see stars in those days, not so much the picture. They would go for the star.
Bogart and Bergman, and the rest is cinematic history.
He's looking at you, kid.
Ilsa looks over the rim of her champagne glass and smiles. Now Rick and Ilsa are locked in a kiss. She stops.
Is that can on fire? Or is it my heart pounding? Wherever they put you, and wherever I'll be, I want you to know that. Kiss me. Kiss me as if it were the last time.
Film historian Ronald Haver.
The chemistry between Bogart and Bergman, I think, was apparent from the very beginning of shooting. There are times when actors and actresses just click, even though they have very little in common with each other.
Pia Lindstrom.
I don't think there was a relationship with Humphrey Bogart off the set. I think that's acting. They were acting.
Ilsa. In love with one man and devoted to the cause of another. Resistance leader Victor Laszlo. Portrayed by the dashing Paul Henreid.
I love you very much, Ilsa.
Your secret will be safe with me.
Paul Henreid was now doing Now Voyager, the Betty Davis picture at Warner Brothers, and they were looking at the dailies, saying, this guy's terrific, he's marvelous, he'd be ideal for Laszlo. But he was under contract to RKO Radio Pictures. He'd been loaned out for Now Voyager. So what happened is, they convinced Paul Henreid to take third billing, but co-starring billing.
The stars were supported by a superlative backdrop, a stellar roll call of Hollywood's finest actors. Who can forget Sidney Greenstreet as the unscrupulous Ferrari?
It would take a miracle to get you out of Casablanca, and the Germans have outlawed miracles.
Peter Lorre is the scheming Ugarte.
Rick, hide me! Do something! You must help me, Rick! Do something!
Come on.
Rick!
Conrad Veidt as the villainous Strasser.
My dear mademoiselle, perhaps you have already observed that in Casablanca, human life is cheap.
Dooley Wilson as Rick's trusted friend.
How much trouble?
Too much trouble.
Well, now, don't you bow. Just knuckle down and knock on wood.
And the unflappable Claude Rains.
I've often speculated on why you don't return to America. Did you abscond with the church funds?
you run off with a senator's wife. I like to think that you killed a man. It's the romantic in me.
This is a very exciting set because you had all types of actors, all types of uniforms. You had French sailors, French soldiers.
Actor Dan Seymour.
It was a fantastic set to be working on.
Orchestrating the activity on the set was director Michael Curtiz. The king of Warner Brothers action pictures, Curtiz was the man behind such blockbusters as Captain Blood and The Adventures of Robin Hood.
Welcome to Sherwood, my lady.
Mike Curtiz was the busiest man on the set. He was running all over the place like he was being chased by someone. But if you didn't work right, he would let you know. But if you worked right, he had a habit of saying, good, 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 good. He was always talking to himself. But he was very good, and he knew his business.
He came over from Europe because Warner's wanted somebody like Lubitsch.
Francis Shod, sound.
Accent, only his accent was so thick, nobody knew what the hell he's talking about.
I like Mike. I had great respect for him.
First assistant director Lee Katz.
I don't think he was one of the world's great directors to work with artists. He was technically as proficient a director as ever I've worked with.
Curtiz's use of shadow, camera movement, and his knack for rapid pacing all combined to give Casablanca the look that has become its trademark. Curtiz also proved himself to be adept at some classic Hollywood trickery.
That whole airport took place on a stage. We had a cutout plane, but the plane was in perspective. Mike said, you know, I'd like to have some mechanics working around the plane so it isn't just sitting there. And that's when we came to the conclusion that if you had a normal size individual by the plane, it would look ridiculous. So we ended up finding some midgets to portray the mechanics as though that the whole thing was in perspective.
When I walked in there and looked out there and looked out through the hangar doors out to the field that they had and saw an airplane and people walking around, and the airplane was a cutout, and the people were midgets, I said, I've seen everything.
Francis Shide.
Everything. It was fantastic.
Michael Curtiz was a dynamic filmmaker, a commanding presence who also had a colorful way of speaking.
Now, I'd been told that this picture was to be done of all the dialogue live, nothing to be post-synced, put in later. It had to be done on the set, clean, clean, and perfect. And we got through about four lines, and one of those big arcs started going, wah, wah, wah. And Mike came yelling and screaming at me. When he got mad, he had a bald head, and his veins stuck out in his head, and his eyes popped out, and he came right up to my face yelling, God damn you, sir, God damn you dumb, you idiot, you fool, you ruined my picture, my beautiful actress with the greatest scene in the picture, and you stopped the scene, you are dumb, 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 dumb. And then I tried to say, well, Mike, you know, they told me, and he says, shut up, to hell with you, to hell with you. And I thought, well, this is it. So I ran back at him, to hell with you, to hell with you, to hell with you, and to hell with you, sir. And the set died. You could hear a pin drop.
There was absolute chaos as to the approach they were going to take and whether or not this was going to work. And there were constant revisions of the script right on the set.
The writers never knew what happened to these characters. Every day there was a different kind of, you know, ending to the story. She was very uncomfortable. My mother felt very uncomfortable, she said, making the movie because she was so insecure with the filmmakers who didn't seem to know what they had in mind.
In addition to routine changes, the script was revised to meet the demands of censor Joseph Breen. To accommodate the Breen office, overt sexuality contained within the play was cleverly transformed into subtle innuendo.
Could I speak to you for just a moment, please?
How'd you get in here? You're underage.
I came with Captain Reno.
I should have known.
My husband is with me, too.
He is. Well, Captain Reno's getting broad-minded. Sit down.
The Breen office at the time said, make sure that there's no suggestion in the audience's mind that they went to bed together.
Julius Epstein.
And we said, fine, because we knew that the audience would make up their own mind and each would have their bed scene in their own imagination, which was much better than actually showing it, I think.
You knew how much I loved you. How much I still love you.
now a black and white photo of Colonel Jack Warner in uniform with a thin mustache.
Warner Brothers was firmly dedicated to the war effort, and Casablanca was no exception.
What if you murdered all of us? From every corner of Europe, hundreds, thousands would rise to take our places. Even Nazis can't kill that fast. Play La Marseillaise. Play it.
Playwright Murray Burnett.
I cried when I wrote it. I literally cried when I wrote it. Tears. Actual tears. I was writing and I cried. It was that powerful to me, and it was that powerful in the film.
Well, by now, the Epsteins have come back from Washington, and they're working on the script again, and they're trying to determine what to do about the ending.
It's still a story without an ending.
New pages were being delivered to the set daily, but still the ultimate outcome of the story remained unknown.
They couldn't figure out whether Ilsa stayed with her husband or went off with the Humphrey Bogart character, went off with Rick. They could never make up their minds during the making of the film who the main character should end up with.
She said, I said to the Epstein brothers, who do I go off with at the end, Henry or Bogart? And we said, as soon as we know, we'll let you know.
And in a moment of mutual inspiration, the means to the end finally came to them.
Phil, my brother and I, were driving to the studio on Sunset Boulevard, and just below Beverly Glen, we turned to each other and said simultaneously, round up the usual suspects. If you're going to round up the usual suspects, what for? A murder.
Get away from that phone. I would advise you not to interfere.
I was willing to shoot Captain Reno, and I'm willing to shoot you.
Who does the audience want to see murdered? Major Strasser.
Put that phone down. Get me the radio tower. Put it down.
Who do they want to see kill Major Strasser? Humphrey Bogart. And who do they want to see round out the whole thing? Claude Rains, with the line, round up the usual suspects.
Major Strasser has been shot.
We were walking from the commissary one day, and we hear voices hailing us, and we turn, and there's Michael Curtiz, the director, and Hal Wallace running to us, and their faces are white. He said, your ending does not work. And we said, what do you mean it doesn't work? He said, come on to the projection room and we'll show you. Bogart shoots Strassi, falls to the floor. The gendarmes walk in and Claude Rains says, Major Strasser has been shot, round up the usual suspects. We said, you can't do that. You've got to show a shot of Bogart waiting, a shot of Rains looking at him back and forth. And then he says,
round up the usual suspects.
And it worked. And then we knew we had an end, but we never could understand why such experienced people hadn't seen it. I think it's because they were so nervous about the picture.
Now that an end to the film had been discovered, the only way to resolve Casablanca's love affair became clear.
If that plane leaves the ground and you're not with him, you'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life.
But what about us?
We'll always have Paris. We didn't have, we lost it until you came to Casablanca. We got it back last night.
When I said I would never leave you.
And you never will. But I've got a job to do too. Where I'm going, you can't follow. What I've got to do, you can't be any part of. Ilse, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that. No. Is looking at you, kid.
Rudy Belmer.
You know, it's an ideal ending because you have something for everybody, really.
I think it's a film that sort of resonates within you, and as you get older, you appreciate more things in it.
True yesterday, true today, true tomorrow.
Murray Burnett.
That's my definition of a classic.
They become icons, and they've become symbols, and they've moved into the culture beyond the film. It's gone beyond just being a story.
Principal photography was completed, the fate of our characters decided. Yet Hal Wallace was still not satisfied.
It might be a good idea for you to disappear from Casablanca for a while.
A month later, Bogart was brought back to dub in the memorable last line, said to have been written by Wallace himself.
It doesn't make any difference about our bet. You still owe me 10,000 francs.
And that 10,000 francs should pay our expenses.
Our expenses?
Mm-hmm.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
And through the years, this beautiful friendship between Casablanca and the public has been woven into the fabric of our culture.
Dr. Fouché thinks he was poisoned.
The success of Casablanca is readily apparent with a number of imitations that rapidly emerged.
Coming intolerable.
In 1946, the Marx Brothers released A Night in Casablanca.
Attention, attention. Murder at the Hotel Casablanca. The manager, Rolazzotti, is found dead.
A heavy man in a fez is on the phone. An officer in a safari hat paces the office, now outside with a grinning Harpo Marx.
What do you think you're doing? Holding up the building?
Harpo nods.
Come on!
The man pulls him away and the building collapses.
Warner Brothers certainly had good intentions with a 1956 television series based on Casablanca.
A woman in a white strapless gown is escorted through a Moroccan club by a man in a tuxedo.
As a segment of Warner Brothers television anthology series, this World War II drama was a study in 50s sensibilities.
Men in turbans dot the expatriate crowd.
The series tried to capture the magic of the film. And the magic eluded them.
A kiss is still a kiss.
Undaunted, Warner Brothers tried again in 1981.
A neon orange sign reads, Rick's Cafe American.
This series starred Scatman Crothers as Sam, David Soul as Rick,
if you have been in Casablanca,
and Hector Elizondo as Reno.
Round up the usual suspects.
Again, the magic was missing.
A logo. Warner Brothers Classic Animation presents... Bugs Bunny's face fades in.
However, there was one tribute to Casablanca that was spectacular.
In the cartoon, a carrot sits on a map of Africa. A title appears in red script. Carrot Blanca. Now, inside the Café au lait Americain.
Who's got trouble?
We've got trouble.
How much trouble?
Too much trouble.
Well, don't you frown, just knuckle down and knock on wood.
With Daffy Duck as Sam, Tweety Bird as Ugarte, and the very debonair Bugs Bunny as Rick.
What's up, Doc?
I'm sure I wouldn't know.
Carrot Blanca was a clever and fitting tribute to a cinema masterpiece.
Of all the juice joints, in all the towns, in all the countries, in all the worlds, she picks this one.
I know what you mean.
Casablanca has been called a perfect film, capturing the spirit of romance, patriotism, intrigue, and idealism with artistic integrity and honesty that is rarely found in film. I tend to agree. Generations to come will embrace the story of Rick's Café Américain, and as time goes by, the lure of Casablanca and Bogey and Bergman will continue to cast its spell. This truly is cinema magic.
Rick and Ilsa share a passionate kiss. Now words appear over an old map of the African continent. The end, a Warner Brothers first national picture. Now a montage of black and white film outtakes. In front of the sign over Rick's Café Américain, a hand holds the film slate for the third take of a plane scene. Credits appear, narrated by Lauren Bacall. In order of appearance, Pia Lindstrom, Rudy Bilmer, Julie Sepstein, Irene Lee Diamond, Ronald Haver, Murray Burnett, Dan Seymour, Howard Koch, Henry Mancini, Francis Scheid, and Lee Katz. Produced and directed by Scott Benson. Copyright 1992, 1998 Turner Entertainment Company, a subsidiary of Time Warner Incorporated. All rights reserved. Now, Lauren Bacall walks into a room with a piano and an ornate hanging lamp. She leans one elbow on the piano.
Rick and Ilsa.
A perfect moment captured in time from one of the greatest films ever made. Hello, I'm Lauren Bacall. Now, you must realize I'm biased when it comes to speaking of Casablanca, but I truly believe, with Bogey and Bergman leading the troupe of extraordinary players, a cinema masterpiece was created and movie magic made. The lure of Casablanca lies in its romance, intrigue, and mystery. But those are common ingredients for many movies. I think what makes Casablanca a landmark film and a touchstone for so many is largely because of its romance. Casablanca premiered in 1942, a time when the world was embroiled in the Second World War. The film perfectly captures the fervor of national pride and sacrifice. It's no wonder Casablanca remains a favorite of audiences around the world. To truly be called a cinema classic, a film has to enter the very fabric of our global conscience. Casablanca has done that and much, much more. Famous lines from the film are quoted so often, they have entered the realm of popular jargon. Think about it. When someone says, "He's looking at you, kid," there is instant identification. And therein lies the magic of Casablanca. So welcome once again to Rick's Cafe America. Once you cross the threshold, you'll be caught in the mystical spell of romance, mystery, intrigue, and danger. All courtesy of Bogey, Bergman, and the magic of film. Now there's only one thing left to say. Play it, Sam.
Fade to black.